This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Is it week 10 already? Really? Have we reached that point? Yeah, we have. We got that. Raiders last night beat the Chargers to kick off Thursday night football. And every game in Oakland, I guess this year, is going to get that sort of extra special treatment, right? Any win by the Raiders in Oakland is going to get that extra special treatment, because this is the final time that the black and silver and black are going to be playing in Oakland, in the black hole. The last night was a game in which there should have been some sort of celebration, because the Raiders are above 500 now at 5-4. As Josh Jacobs gets into the end zone for the touchdown with about a minute left, and then the defense does its job going after Phillip Rivers on the final drive, forcing him into bad throws, it results in a 2-point victory. A victory that was, I was sitting there, was wondering if it actually would come about, given that Daniel Carson missed the extra point and gave the Chargers and Phillip Rivers, who leads the NFL in passing, plenty of time to really move down the field to try to kick a game-winning field goal. But as everybody was celebrating in Oakland, it did hit me, right? There was this real, you know, look, NFL wins, you get a handful of them a year, really. You know, every team gets, you know, 11 at the most, 12 at the most, if you're really, really good, maybe 8, maybe 6. Some of them don't even come at home. So a couple of home wins should be cause for celebration. But when you think about what's going on in Oakland, because they're moving to Las Vegas, how many people in the stands who are not season ticket holders were at their final game ever watching the Oakland Raiders in Oakland? You know, the season ticket holders, they'll come for a few more games, but what about the guy that hardly ever goes and landed tickets to this one? And he's never going to go again. He may not go again. So to see the team win, and not only see the team win, but A, do it in a way they did it with Jacobs rushing in for the winning touchdown with a minute left, get over 500 at 5-4, and put themselves in a position to make a little noise in a wild card race, and also beat a division rival in the Chargers the way they did. Think about the fans that aren't ever going to go back to a Raider game in Oakland. May go one or two a year. And you'd probably celebrate and scream like it was the Super Bowl too. But enough about me. Ron Culver, the Charger fan of the show, his thoughts on what happened, especially in the final minute.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Thursday Night Football, Raiders win 26-24. John Gruden is doing something. I mean, 5-4 on the season. I don't know if he's coach of the year material, but he's doing good.
Hey, he's coach of the year at the Coliseum.
He must be. Yeah, at the Coliseum, he's coach of the year.
God, that victory lap he took around the stadium, you would have thought he won all the awards.
Yeah, primetime win at home, I get it. But golly, it's a little over. It's a little much.
I didn't realize. I mean, first when they were saying when he was running around, I'm like, oh, that's kind of dumb. But then, you know, realize that that was their last primetime game.
Yeah, this is what you're getting with the Raiders now, right? I mean, this is like an end of there's this nostalgic feel to this Raider season of ending it, and everything is going to be the final time X, right?
Yeah. So, when do they start handing out original seats?
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. So, and this is a city. I mean, when you think about it, this is a city that, you know, had the Raiders for a long time and then lost them. And then now they're losing them again. And that's hard. It's not like, you know, St. Louis once had a football team called the Cardinals, and then they went to Arizona, and then they got another team, the Rams, and then they lost that. But this was the Raiders. This was the same Raiders. This was Al Davis's Raiders that left, came back, and now is leaving again. And that's got to be heartbreaking. If you're a longtime third generation, fourth generation Oakland citizen, or, you know, it's got to be tough to have seen the Raiders leave twice in your lifetime, if you're an older member of the community.
Yeah, but don't you put that kind of on Oakland for not,
yeah, a little
being
bit,
able
sure.
to, not to be able to get a stadium? I mean, they're losing all their teams because they're not willing to pony up money for new stadiums, new facilities.
I mean, listen, you'd probably know the situation in California more than I do. Do they have money? Is there money to do this?
I mean,
or they hoard it? Or?
Oakland, probably not, but there's enough private investors that could get on board. But
that's,
I guess,
what I don't understand.
I guess maybe the Niners are a little bit more sexier than the Raiders.
You know what's sad? We always complain as a society, right? I mean, as a big society, we complain that we don't think these billionaires should be taking taxpayer money for their own stadiums. You know what the problem is? We keep giving them taxpayer money for these stadiums, right? A lot of times we do. Yeah, sometimes we don't. I mean, Jerry Jones, I think, publicly, privately financed his stadium, and there's been other stadiums that have been privately financed. I think Kroenke's is. But I also think they do behind the scenes get tax breaks and tax cuts on certain things. I mean, there's always a little wiggle room that the city is giving them, right, to build these things in the first place. But a lot of times a city will go, no, we'll build it for you. We've got money in this and we'll take money from this and whatever, and we'll build it for you. And so the owners go, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't we? Because if you don't have to pay for it, you won't pay for it. Right. And so, yeah, the city of Oakland probably should have been something. I don't know the situation all that closely and the economic situation in a California city like Oakland, whether or not they have the funds to do anything to give the Raiders a stadium. But it goes back to the point. We're going to be doing this a lot towards the end of the season about this is the final Raider X. This is the final Raider in Oakland. You know, Y, whatever it is. And you're right. Last night was the final primetime game for the Raiders.
For now. But I mean, you know, what if there's a tasty matchup later on in the season where the Raiders have made some noise? Maybe it's against the Chiefs and they get flexed.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
I could totally see that happening.
That's very true. Good point. So
I guess Gruden has to do his victory lap once more.
I want to tee this up for you. The final drive
was magnificent.
You can talk about the whole game, whatever you want to talk about from the game.
No, you know, I mean, the whole game, it was a typical Chargers-Raiders game going back and forth where, you know, literally when these two teams meet 90% of the time, you just throw out the record book and let these guys just duke it out on the field.
Of course.
That's how all Raiders-Charger games always happen, always seem to be. Whether one team is better than the other always seems to play down to the level of the other team. I'm not saying that the Chargers were playing down to the Raiders, because the Raiders certainly are doing things on, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which I haven't seen. That was kind of a little bit of a shock tonight. And so I don't know if that was just, you know, a lot of the Chargers who missed the bus to get to Oakland, or maybe it was,
right,
you know, the surrounding fires kind of worried them. I have no idea. I know it was a cooler night, so the Chargers should be okay with that. I can't explain what happened for, 48 minutes of the game?
I don't blame you.
The final drive, to me, this might be an unpopular take, or it might be a new popular take, or it might be a growing take. I'm not sure. Phillip Rivers is old.
He is old, but do you account for the pressure that the offensive line come on in.
I will certainly say
in the backfield here.
I will say this. There was certainly a lot of pressure, but no, I don't think there was any more pressure than a lot of quarterbacks who face a good front line are able to do. Now, I'm talking elite quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers would drop back, and then as the pocket started to form, he would step up into it. His passes were so erratic.
Terrible. Terrible.
They didn't have a chance. Every single time he threw the ball, I'm like, oh, that's an incompletion. I mean, either he's throwing it 5 yards in front of the receiver, he's throwing it behind the receiver, throwing it too high, throwing it too low. It didn't matter. He was missing the mark completely.
He threw balls that were over the heads of guys. You're right. There was one that should have been picked off that wasn't. The fourth down throw that he had that where there was a penalty flag was terrible. They got a gift. They got another set of downs, and then he still threw four straight incompletions. Well, actually, the last one was an interception, but the guy could have dropped it, and the game would have been over anyway. But all of them were terrible. All of them were terrible. And here's the thing. Even though he didn't look all that great all game, I did say, look, Here's the gift, right? The Daniel Carson miss sets you up to win this game,
yep,
right? Sets you up to win this game. Move down the field, kick the field goal, and get out of here. and get a win.
See, I can't help but think,
and
like, in a,
couldn't move the ball at all.
I can't help but think, like, in a similar situation, given that situation, I'm gonna, you know, go around like Kyle Allen route. Maybe Fitzpatrick, who's probably around the same age as Phillip Rivers. I can't help but think that they would have been a tad bit more accurate. Now, I'll give it to the Raiders. Their coverage was excellent. Every single time, which receiver he was throwing to, that guy was covered. There was a Raider guy right on his hip.
Right.
And I will give the Raiders the fact that there was tight coverage. But, he and his receivers were not on the same page.
I've just never seen an upper-level quarterback throw that terribly for eight throws. I mean, yeah, he was given eight opportunities to get
so yards.
The only yardage they gained on the final drive was the penalty yardage that they got on the defensive penalty.
They didn't complete one pass. I was surprised at one point, yes, I know there's a hurry up situation needed, but you had all three timeouts. Why not take a stab and say, let me hand it off to Gordon. Let me hand it off to Eckler. See if we can get just a few yards, kind of scare them and say, okay, we can't just defend completely against a pass.
Right, exactly.
Because, honestly, when it was third and 10, fourth and 10, they're passing. They're not going to take the chance
to run. Of course, exactly.
But like on those first downs, especially when you got the gift, that was a light penalty. Yeah, it was defensive holding. We all saw that. But, I'm just curious how many times that type of holding goes on every single play. I mean, we know there's holding on every single play. It's just whether or not a referee wants to call it or not.
To me, it was really shocking watching him do that. It was just, look, even if you couldn't get downfield enough to kick a field goal, I was surprised they didn't move the ball on any play at all.
No, they couldn't.
Because a lot of times what you'll see in a 2-minute drill like that is you're sending receivers out and then you're looking. And then sometimes you go, all right, nothing's open. There's a dump off pass. There's somebody around. You don't like to throw it there, but at least it's positive yardage. Maybe it gets out of bounds or you use a timeout or whatever. He didn't even do that.
No,
there was nobody there for that. He rushed every one of his throws. He rolled out, overthrew Henry. I mean, there was every scenario possible. Was a mess that of Phillip Rivers not being even close to completing passes.
That was all on Rivers. I'm sorry. That's where I'm starting to think. I've never been a fan of his throwing style, where it looks like he's shot putting the ball every single time.
Sure.
I always think that, oh man, if he was able to really get his arm, and I know that defensive backs have always said, it's a lot. His passes are a lot sneakier than they look. That he actually can, they do come out really hard. They're a lot more accurate. Don't let that throwing style fool you. He's got a good arm. But I couldn't help but think, what if we had someone who could throw the ball? I don't think that would happen to Drew Brees. And Phillip Rivers is supposed to be in that upper echelon.
That's right.
I don't know if it would happen to Russell Wilson. I mean, it certainly wouldn't happen to Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. And it just seemed to me that that age was playing into a part of it, because I think he was trying to push himself to do things that his body can no longer do. And that's
has he shown that this season, that age is creeping in?
See,
has this been the kind of year where Phillip Rivers is struggling enough to make
question?
I mean, he leads the NFL in passing yards.
Yeah, like you said, he's leading the NFL in passing yards. Now I'm starting to think back, let's go back in the games. Is he leading the NFL in passing yards like Blake Bortles did?
Right.
Where it was just garbage time minutes, you're playing from behind, so obviously you're leading the league in passing yards because you're throwing all the time.
It's possible that it might be creeping in the fact that his body doesn't respond to short weeks as well as it could.
Right.
But I also want to give credit to the Raiders defense. They were getting to him all game.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Who
take
sacked
that
five
away
times?
From him. I don't want to take anything. I mean, that front line on the Raiders, they came to play.
They did.
They came to play. Pressure was on them all the time, and that was kind of neat to see.
And the offensive line for the Chargers just did not have a good game. And now they're 4-6, and any hope of revitalizing something and moving on is just kind of gone out the window now.
Yep. Put them on Monday Night Football from here on out.
That's right. Yeah. And the Raiders now 5-4 and acting like they won the Super Bowl. So we'll get more into the week 10 of the NFL schedule coming up. But there is news out of Florida State. There is a candidate for the opening. And boy, oh boy, it's a name. It is a name. But is it a good idea? I'll have that next. SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, improve visibility, save some money at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop by for their See Better Drive Safer Sale. You can earn a $15 gift card after a mail-in rebate when you purchase either Sylvania headlight bulbs or Bosch Focus or Trico Titan wiper blades. They'll even install those wiper blades for free while you wait. Don't risk your safety for poor visibility. Why would you do that? Let the professional parts people at O'Reilly help you find just what you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. So Florida State fired Willie Taggart earlier this week. And I told you earlier this week who I thought should be the head coach of the Seminoles. Go down to Boca and pull Lane Kiffin out of the retirement community and the early bird dinners and get him up to Tallahassee and coach the Seminoles. I don't want to hear you going after Bob Stoops. He's kind of into the XFL now. I don't want to hear you going after anybody else. Urban Meyer might come back and coach us. No, he won't. Lane Kiffin will. Go get him. But there's a new name that has emerged and for the head coaching position. A name you all know, a name that is a big alumni, a name that might actually bring some sizzle and some spark and some energy and some fun and, dare I say, prime time to Florida State.
Prime time.
Deion Sanders has emerged as a coaching candidate for this job. Deion Sanders could be the head coach of the Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah. I would like to see this the resume, please.
Yeah. This is a bad idea. This is a bad idea.
This idea is great for the initial press conference.
This is exactly right. For the initial press conference, you're right. When they go, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce you to the new head coach of the Florida State Seminoles. Ladies and gentlemen, Deion Sanders. Let him roll. Just let him go. And after that, you've got gold. But after that, what do you do? Okay, let's get serious for a second. This is bad for Florida State. You want to do this as part of some sort of fun, get in the news, you know, making some noise. This isn't just a pipe dream, by the way. The Tallahassee Democrat, Wayne McGee III, who writes for that paper, said that he is a candidate for this job. He's a serious candidate. That they went after Bob Stoops. That they did not go after Bob Stoops. Let me say that they did not have agreement with Stoops for the job. So that he is a serious candidate for this job. How much consideration will he get? Now, if you're Florida State, you are in a crossroads here. A friend of mine is a Florida State fan, and he texted me about, you know, Lane Kiffin, and I told him, I said, that's a perfect decision. This is an important decision for Florida State. They had a program under Jimbo Fisher that won a national championship not that long ago. And Jimbo Fisher left for the SEC and a way bigger paycheck. But Florida State was still a prominent program. It had slid a little bit. It had issues here and there. But it was still in, it still is in the recruiting hotbed of Florida. It still brings in big time athletes. Taggart was a good choice. Taggart was a good choice to coach this team. He had done good at South Florida. He had done good at Oregon. He could come here to Florida State and keep the machine going. He could not, and it set the program back. You don't need this. You don't need a Deion Sanders who has not coached at that level before. I know he's done some work with high schools in the past or whatnot, but Deion's never been a head football coach at any major college or even minor college. This is not the job at this time to give to him. He would seriously need to prove that he could handle that. I think Deion is a smart guy, and I think Deion gets it, and I think Deion could do a good job at a smaller place and work his way up. If that's his career path, if he wants to be a coach, I think he could be a good one. But he can't be a good one right off the bat. I just can't see a Florida State program just immediately popping with Deion Sanders at the helm.
This would be bad for Deion Sanders, and it would be bad for Florida State. If he doesn't do it, what does it mean? If he doesn't bring Florida State back up, does it hurt his legacy at Florida State? Doesn't hurt his legacy with the NFL and the Cowboys and the Niners and Atlanta and all the history that he had with the baseball and the football. But at Florida State, where he was a two-sport athlete and he was prime time and all of those things that he was in the 90s.
I mean,
the 80s.
Has Deion ever coached?
That's what I'm wondering. I mean,
at any level?
Reports say he did some work with some high schools, but I don't know if he was ever a coach of a high school.
Yeah, I mean,
right now he works for the NFL Network. When does he have time to coach anything?
Yeah, I mean, he's an analyst.
Right, he's an analyst.
I mean, he's I look at, say, like someone like Steve Young as an analyst who I could see coach. I don't look at Deion Sanders as an analyst who I could see coach.
Me either.
There's just, I mean, he is great at interviews. He's great at getting people to share information and to talk to him. And he's definitely, I mean, if he was to be a coach, he would definitely be a player's coach because he gets into that psyche of the player. But I don't see him, and the only benefit I see from Deion Sanders coaching would be on the recruiting end.
Absolutely. Deion going into your house to pitch you Florida State would be great.
God.
Would be great.
Sign up right there.
And that's a job he should consider taking on somebody else's staff, but not his own.
Or maybe on Florida State staff.
Right.
You know, whoever they hire.
Somebody else's staff, right? If they hire Lane Kiffin and he wants to bring in Deion as a recruiting specialist, do that.
If he shows up in your living room, I mean, he's the type of guy when talking football and talking about Florida State is probably equivalent to a salesman selling ice to Eskimos.
Absolutely. I like Deion on TV. I enjoy him. I enjoy Deion on TV.
Oh, he's,
I like
great, Deion. He's a great analyst.
I like Deion, period. I'm a fan of Deion's. Listen, man, I loved that 30 for 30 about his double play attempt, back in the day. I like his candidness. I like that, you know what? He's always said prime time was a character. That Deion was not prime time. Prime time was a creation that he made to highlight what he was doing in football because his position wasn't as highly paid as he thought it should be. But if he could bring that kind of level and energy in play, he thought he could, and he did. He did. But everybody who played baseball with Deion, that includes at Florida State and with the Yankees and the Braves and even at the Cincinnati Reds, never saw prime time. They saw Deion. And I always respected that from him, but he can't, this is not, no, don't do this. Don't do this. Because if he fails at this, and you can fail at this, even if you're football smart like he is, even if you kind of know what you're doing, and I would believe he does, all of those things. If he fails at this, it's a bad look for the school. It's a bad look for him. It looks like a novelty when the school, I want to say this with all respect to Deion. This needs to be a very serious hire. And this can't be about going back in the old days and ringing in this guy with star power. Get the best coach you can possibly get. And even if it means getting a guy that is not tied to the school in any capacity, because I always hate that argument when the alumni says, we need to get a Florida State guy because nobody gets us like people like us. That's untrue on 1,000 levels. That's all talk. You will take the best coach you can. If Florida was looking for a Florida guy, they would have never landed Urban Meyer. All right. Yeah, they did well with Steve Spurrier. That worked, but a lot of times it doesn't work. A lot of times these guys go home again and before, look what's going on with Jim Harbaugh. He can't beat Ohio State and people want him fired. That's his school. That's where he went to school. That's where he was a star. And yet he's not immune from the people taking shots at him and criticizing him. This whole idea that nobody gets us like us, that's what you want to believe, but it's completely untrue. It's untrue. You're not special. You're not a special university that only a certain elite group of people got to go to. Go get the best coach you can. Stay away from this. He understands us. He gets us. He played for us things, so he'll be good at this job. I have no idea if he's good at this job or not. But you know who I know is good at that job? Lane Kiffin. And that's why he should be your hire in Tallahassee.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, football and basketball seasons are in full swing, so get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. And if you sign up today, you can receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and professional sports, every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, tease your way through the season. You can even bet on wild prop bets like who will win the NBA MVP, Heisman Trophy, all sorts of different propositions. Bets are a ton of fun. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over there on your mobile device and use the promo code SBNation55. Receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So here is a column today by Charles Robinson at Yahoo Sports that is going to be amazingly unpopular for its content, but I think it's very important when you want to understand the business of the National Football League. The topic of his column, and it's something that I think you and I have been touching on since his suspension, or not suspension, but his departure from the NFL, is on Antonio Brown. And the issue is the league's reaction to Antonio Brown and what they're doing to him to keep him out of the league. So this is the crux of the column. Antonio Brown did some things while he was with the Patriots that the Patriots did not like. He allegedly sent threatening texts involving a woman who accused him of sexual harassment and sexual assault. Antonio Brown has denied all this. He's had two come out. One filed a civil suit, and the Patriots parted ways with him after, what was it, week two of the season?
Two or three, yeah.
Two or three of the season, right? Played the game of the Dolphins and then was gone. So there's a report that the Seattle Seahawks did some diligence on Antonio Brown to see if they could sign him. And then they passed because the NFL was still doing its investigation. They went with Josh Gordon. Antonio Brown is sitting in limbo because the investigation is preventing teams from wanting to sign him. Because they're not doing the investigation in a prompt manner as Antonio Brown and his agent would like them to do. Meaning the investigation could go on as long as the NFL wants it to go along. And because of that, teams are not interested in signing him, even though it has been reported by a few guys and girls who cover this league, men and women who cover this league, that Antonio Brown has interest of teams who would like to talk to him about playing for him. Despite all of this nonsense and all of this craziness and all of the things that we have looked at and shook our head with, that there are still teams that would like to figure out if they could put him in their system and use him as a wide receiver. But the NFL's investigation is trapping these teams into saying, we don't want to get involved in this because we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we bring him on board and then the NFL comes through and says, suspend it. We've done our investigation and it's over. They want the investigation to play itself out. Find out where Antonio Brown stands with the investigation. Are these credible? Are they not credible? Is the civil suit something that should be taken with seriously enough to warrant a suspension? Remember, it doesn't have to be a crime here for the NFL to suspend, right? It can be detrimental to the league, that kind of thing. But is the civil suit against him enough to say, yeah, there's something here. There's enough here to make us we have to suspend him for this. So the teams are sitting back going, you know what? We're going to wait. We're going to wait on all this. But Charles Robinson's column today brings up an interesting point. Where is the union? Now, before you say, guy, it's Antonio Brown. It's Antonio Brown. I don't want to see him in this league. Blah, blah, blah. Relax for a second. This isn't about Antonio Brown. Where is the union? Because that's their job, to protect everybody. There is a precedent here that the league is gaining power on. We don't like this guy. We don't like his image. We don't want him in our league anymore. We have an investigation. Let's take our sweet time. Let's see where this goes. And in the process, teams don't want to have him on their roster, so he's out of the league. And what's he left with? He's over on Twitter spewing, using profanity, yelling about the league, screaming about the league, and then backtracking it because he's losing his mind. But we don't care as long as he's not in uniform. But what does that mean for every single player that is currently on teams? And one anonymously said, what does this mean when a civil suit is filed against me? What if civil suits get filed all the time? What if somebody files a civil suit against me? And then the league says, and my team cuts me for it. And then the league goes, yeah, we'll do an investigation when we get around to it. And then the next thing you know, I'm out. Where's my union rep? Where's my union rep saying, hey, we want some due diligence on this. We want some promptness to this investigation. He has a career. He has a life. He has a job. That civil lawsuit, we don't even know if it's frivolous. We don't know if there's anything behind it. Get on it and let us know. They haven't even suspended Antonio Brown. We're in week 10. They haven't even come down with a decision on its investigation onto these allegations. Now, we all can have our opinions on Antonio Brown. We're all rightfully to it. I mean, my God, the comment section on the Yahoo article are filled with people who are saying, I've had enough. I don't care. I don't blah, 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 blah. This guy's a loser, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we all may feel about that. But I think it's an interesting concept when you think about this. The players have to be protected by some sort of union that backs them up, even when backing up that player is extremely unpopular. The league has an obligation to this. At least the union does. The union has an obligation. You can't leave Antonio Brown floating out there because it could mean anybody could be floated out there. And the example that Robinson uses is two of them. Ezekiel Elliott got a 6-game domestic violence suspension, and Tom Brady got a 4-game suspension in the Deflategate scandal. But there was one key thing that both of them have that Antonio Brown does not have, in that Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft backed those guys publicly enough for the league to get on their horse and figure out something. At least come down with something. They didn't let them swing around for a long period of time. Brady fought his over and over and over again and then finally said that's enough. But the owners on those teams publicly supported those guys. Antonio Brown has none of that. Antonio Brown has no public supporters. None. He doesn't have an owner that's going to bat for him to the commissioner. He doesn't have players backing him and yelling at the union. He doesn't even have a union rep publicly backing him in this situation. He's got nothing. So what does he do? He has to sit and wait. Now, there's a report that there's going to be a meeting, but there is still yet to be a decision on the investigation. Now, this is an unpopular thought that Antonio Brown is a victim of this process. It's unpopular because the seriousness of what has been alleged to him. We did the segment on the threatening text messages, and they were kind of horrifying, to be honest with you. Where the way he sent a picture of the girl and her kids, and it was absolutely ridiculous and also a little disturbing. But if you take a step back and look at, okay, what would this mean if I was an NFL player? I'd kind of want to know where the union stands on this for my sake as a player, because this is what I'm supposed to be protected of. I'm supposed to be protected from an ever-growing, powerful league that is finding every angle to gain more and more power over my career and my livelihood. And this union, Demora Smith, the union head, is supposed to, even if it's extremely unpopular, is supposed to be at the forefront demanding some sort of quote-unquote justice for their players in due process when the league acts like this. I find it fascinating because it does go against, there's a scale here and I don't know where the scale tips. On the one hand, I get it. On the one hand, I'm a union guy. I'm a player guy. I support these players because their careers are short. They have some of the worst deals in professional sports, right? They're constantly under the threat of suspensions for no reason whatsoever, right? All of this for guys that don't have guaranteed contracts. I am for the players getting as much of this as they possibly can. But on the flip side, it's Antonio Brown, man, and I just don't have any sympathy. I don't like him. I don't like what he's done. I don't like how he's acted in the past 7 months, other than to sort of make fun of it when it deserves to be made fun of, and to be horrified and angered when it deserves that emotion as well. But this is a problem for this union. If they're going to treat Antonio Brown this, remember the basics. He got kicked out of the Patriots. There's an investigation. There is no urgency on the investigation. And because there's no urgency on the investigation, teams with interest in employing him are staying away. Think about that with any other player that doesn't have this kind of baggage. Could they do it to a guy who has a dispute with a contractor who built an addition to his house, where he feels like he was being extorted, so he didn't pay the bill? The guy sends a civil suit on him. What happens then? Where there's a legitimate, hey, I got a side too. But the NFL wants to wait on it. These guys don't want to come out publicly and criticize the league, because what if the day comes where they are suspended and there is nobody there screaming for them and yelling for them, and the league says, well, screw that guy. We'll take our time. All he does is go on Twitter and bash us. They're silencing the voice. They can do anything. And if you're DeMora Smith, it may be awful, and you may hate everything about this Antonio Brown situation, and you may have daughters, and you may feel a certain way about what he's been accused of, but you still have to stand by the process, because it's not about Antonio Brown. It's every other player in this league that may go through this, and every other player that is coming up. And also on principle, you're supposed to fight any type of power the NFL is having over its players. You're supposed to fight any time the NFL exerts that power in a way that you can fight back on, even if it's the most popular opinion in the room, and even if you feel like you're going to get slammed publicly for it because everybody's disgusted by the guy you're supporting. It makes complete sense. But again, I like the way Robinson wrote this, because he wrote that this is a really, this is going to be an unpopular opinion, that this isn't going to be something that people are going to gravitate towards and support Antonio Brown in his case to get an investigation, you know, as quickly as possible. But if you think about other players who are not going to be accused of this per se, but something else, it could be a big deal. You know, it's his case. I think his case is going to be looked at differently down the road. I think in the end that Antonio Brown is going to be in this league in some capacity on a small deal that will work out for a few games, and probably that's it. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he never plays again. Ever.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. Just because, I mean, you look at, you know, other people of his ilk, I guess, where I'm not saying he's being blackballed. Hey, I think he's doing enough to himself to keep him out of the league versus what Colin Kaepernick did. But I look at someone who, you know, took to Twitter yesterday and said that, you know, he's in great shape. He's going to be ready if needed. And that was Dez Bryant.
That's right. Dez Bryant. Right.
I mean, Dez Bryant, I mean, what, he's a year, 2 years removed from the league?
Yeah, he hasn't been in the league a while.
He can probably still play, but no one wanted to touch him, and there was no investigation.
None.
It was just attitude.
Thought he was going to go to the Browns and then didn't come up with a deal, and all of that. So, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, as we continue along. It is a Friday. It is SB Nation AM. Got a good show coming up for you later. Darren Woodson is going to join us, former Dallas Cowboy. Hudson Mason will talk some college football. We'll get to the schedules. A lot to get to. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. And this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. God, I hate to say this, man, but it feels like Phillip Rivers is never going to go to a Super Bowl.
No, he's not.
I don't know. Listen, I'm not one of those guys that thinks, you know, I'm not one of those hosts that go, oh, he deserves a champion. Nobody deserves anything. You know, you earn it.
Yeah.
But it is, I think it's sad that he never got to a Super Bowl.
You know, when you compare him to, like, other quarterbacks like a Brad Johnson or Trent Dilfer or... I can go on.
I mean, he's been so good. He's been fun to watch. He's had some big wins. He's never going to go.
Yeah, and I think Father Time is definitely creeping up on him. Last night was more apparent than ever that, you know, he is on the wrong side of his career now.
Yeah, right.
I'm not putting him in the same area as what's his name? Eli Manning. Because I mean, I know they came out at the same time, but it was that 0-for-7 performance on that final 2 minutes. Ooh. Was very Eli Manning-esque.
Very Eli Manning-esque. You're right.
Just inconsistent, trying to do too much, but not having the ability to do anything.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger was able to get to 3 Super Bowls in the Brady era, but I wonder if we hear this in golf a lot, where guys are like, "Man, I came at the Tiger Woods.
Tiger
era,
wasn't
right?
around.
Tiger wasn't around. Phil would have had 15 majors, or what? You know what I mean? You hear this a lot, where if Tiger didn't exist, the world, you know, their world would be different. But that's a really relevant argument because he did exist, and that's the teams you have to play. That's the guy you have to go up against. But it's. So taking the Roethlisberger out, because he did go to Super Bowls during the Brady era, I just feel like he just caught the wrong time. I mean, it was the AFC that was dominated by the Patriots for all of his career, but it's just the also, way he I mean, played, he's not going to go.
Early on in his career, too, I mean, he was going, he had to compete with Peyton.
And Peyton Manning, too. That's right. And Peyton Manning, too. But, man, it's just hard to see. Think all the years I've watched him play well, have those big wins. Kind of the cockiness was addicting to watch, and it looks like it's over. He'll never get to the Super Bowl.